I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Poshnosh Gal, and today I'm joined by the Michelin-starred chef Brad Carter. Brad's culinary journey's taken him across Europe, refining and developing his own style of innovative, modern British cuisine. Brad's now brought this style back to his hometown of Birmingham in the form of the wonderful Carters of Moseley restaurant, which he's run for the last decade. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Hiya. I'm good, thanks. You?
Yeah, really good, thank you. And while I know many have enjoyed lockdown time, you've actually been working really hard through it. Tell me about what you've been doing.
Yeah, no rest for us. It's been full on since the close down, really. So we've been we turned the business into an online shop. So we went to home deliveries. So the concept was, it took us 2 days to build it as a team effort. So we went down to our core four. So it's me, my partner Holland, Alex, the GM, and then Peter, my right-hand man, who's in the kitchen with me since day one. So we built an online shop doing delivered hampers. So the hampers consist of a cooked meal to eat and then a raw meal on the top. So a little bit of a delivered meal and then a little bit of fun that after to cook yourself with our produce. There's a few factors that what made us want to do that, and it was mainly to keep ourselves here, and then secondary to keep the supply chain there, because the ethos of the restaurant is completely about ingredients, suppliers. Absolutely. And it's took me a long time to build that up over the years, and I just had this really bad feeling that if we lose the suppliers and the supply chain to the restaurant, then we don't have the restaurant anymore, let alone whether I'm here or not.
Yeah.
So for me, to keep them going, at one point at the start, I think we were the only people doing it, and we were the only people in the UK ordering produce. And that made me feel good. Although it was very hard, it made me feel good that it was a good thing that we did for them. And
I think
it's made our relationship even stronger. And I think moving forward, when we open back up, obviously I'll be the golden boy now, I think.
Well, your suppliers must be very happy with you. So well done for keeping the supply chain going. And so what are the logistics of setting up a delivery company? You literally set it up overnight. What are the things that you had to go through?
So it's very challenging, very different to the normal day-to-day pressure. Obviously, working in the restaurant for so long now, you get used to that pressure, and then you find another project to keep yourself occupied, and the food in the restaurant is built around a team that make it happen. Whereas this was like back to basics, having to learn everything from scratch. Obviously, I'm not the best on computers. Alex is good on computers, but I can cook. So we built an online shop with the help from the web designers. And then Holly got the whole cellar out and tried to sell every bottle of wine we had in stock. And then we basically decided what we're going to do concept wise, and then just kind of sort of learn along the way. The most challenging thing with it has been constantly having to innovate and keep people hooked. We do that in the restaurant anyway, but some dishes take so long to get perfect, in my opinion, over months and months of developing, you know, an ice cream mouthfeel texture. And then all of a sudden, we're having to think of a new product, you know, almost every day to keep people buying and interested and linked to the restaurant. But that was challenging. That's like time consuming. And then the other challenges was national delivery. So obviously, we normally put something on a plate, send it to a table, and then see someone's reaction instantly. And that's what we live for. We live for that customer engagement that was taken away. So putting something in a box, giving it to a courier, and then hoping for the best kind of things, hard to sort of deal with and understand. And, that was a lot to learn, and hoping it was going to get there for one. And because there's not a lot you can do once you put it in a box and send it, that's it. So yeah, we find that challenging. But at the same time, we've had a lot of really good feedback. Customers have really enjoyed it. a lot of good stuff on the internet. So we put on the bottom of the menus, so we put a sheet in the box explaining the method and what to do and how to eat it and how to cook it. And then at the bottom we say share your stories and stuff. So everyone's been sort of jumping on the internet and showing us their cooking and their results, and that's been nice. Yeah, it's been nice.
So although it's still food that you've kind of transformed your business into, but it's a very different way of operating. Is it something that you think you'll continue with once you actually open up?
I think here in this site, no. I would never say never again. But when we turn back into a restaurant, which we do open on the 2nd of September, we won't be able to do the two things in this location. Obviously, having that kind of setup is, at the moment, we've literally got no tables and chairs in here or anything. So we're just like, assembling boxes in a production line and then sort of filling them up. So to do that at the same time, it's just not possible in this location. But it could be an option elsewhere or somewhere else, or, you know, fingers crossed this doesn't happen again. And you know, we have to go back to it, but it would be a case of just keep changing the location until we open something else. The challenge and the fun side of it, obviously now we've learned it, it would be very simple to flip straight back to it because we know what we're doing and we put all the hard work in as a team. But at the same time, I don't want to go back. I want to get back in the restaurant, to be honest.
Keep looking forward. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's an amazing backup plan. I think what you've done in such a short span of time is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I think with a lot of our peers and the restaurants and my chef friends have all credited us for that. And, whereas I think, you know, obviously it's quite nerve-wracking for the public and whatnot. And we had a conversation between us because we're like family anyway. We're all prepared to do it. We're all prepared for the challenge and to do it together. And that's what it took, really. If Alex or Peter would have said, I don't feel like doing it, it's not for me, when we might have had to go another way. But obviously, we all supported each other to do it. And I think the customers really liked the fact that we just kept our brand in the limelight. And they've been talking about that a lot. You know, like you haven't seen us go away, really, which is, for me, is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just talk about your journey, Brad. You fell in love with cooking when you entered a pizza competition at the age of 11. So how long were you spinning pizzas to be good enough to enter a competition?
Well, I'm actually a lot better now than I was then. food for me was started with I've always been, my mum always cooked when I was young, and then obviously we had a lot of trouble with dad and stuff at home. And then obviously when he went away, it was very much working. You know, my mum worked a lot of hours and a lot of three jobs. So I'd come home and I'd go out all night because it was a bit naughty. But I used to make sure she got fed once a day. And it was, I mean, it was pretty basic. It was on toast and all that kind of stuff. But it was something that I made sure I did. And it was like a routine thing. And I wanted to make sure at least she got something, and then I'd go and she wouldn't even see me. She'd just eat it. So it came from that, really. And I just enjoyed the satisfaction of doing it and putting it together. And it's just something that I like doing because I didn't really learn very well at school, like facing a blackboard and being told what to do. I like to learn sort of my own way and creative and use my hands and stuff.
Right.
Then I chose food. It was called food technology, and then that, I don't know why, but it was called that. And then I chose that, and none of my friends did it, and I did it. And then obviously there was a little pizza thing, and I did it, and I won. But that was like that's like one of my most talked about awards, and it was like when I was like 13 or 14 or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So man, but that was just something that I think. Rather than being madly interested in cooking all the time, it's just something I was obviously just good at. So I just did it, and it came out better than everyone else's. And then it sort of dropped off. And then I started at a local pub where I live, just literally working as a kitchen porter. So I just didn't really know where I was going and whatnot. So I took the job as a kitchen porter, and that was. I really enjoyed it. And then about 6 or 7 months later, I sort of moved over to done a bit of cooking as well. It was pretty simple stuff, and most of it was frozen. Did that. And then one of the chefs there was like, you should you should go to college. And I was really nervous because I didn't really did a lot of school, and it's not something I wanted to do. And I went back to college, and I thought, this is going to be really bad and hard, and actually I really enjoyed it. I wasn't the star of the show or the top boy in the class, but I definitely enjoyed it, and I finished the course and everything. And then from there, I went to live in Menorca in Spain, so a small island near the beef and the Balearics. And I worked in a little family-run restaurant there. So I worked there for nearly 2 years. And that was being away from home, you know, like having fun, but working really hard. And my first sort of real job as a chef, really. And
why did you choose that location?
I got offered it at the end of college. So when I finished, they were talking about what I was going to do and if I had a plan, because they do that with the students. And my first choice was to go to London. That's what I wanted to do. Because I've always been really mad on cities. And I just thought there was not, in my day in Birmingham, like we're talking like 20 years ago, there wasn't as many restaurants as there are now that were worth working at. So if you were going to take your job really seriously, it was kind of like a restaurant wasteland. You know, there's probably two that were worth eating at that are high end, right. And then not a casual market at all. So there's all sort of chains and stuff like that. So the natural thing is to go to college and then use it as a stepping stone to move on to something else. But
yeah, of course.
I don't know. I think I always thought I'd be better in my hometown. I don't know. And I went to Spain. I came back and thought. Got into my head, I wanted to sort of focus more on my skills set rather than working for anyone kind of not well known or famous. Like some of the best chefs now that I know that are actually people that I looked up to, because you know that's going to happen because I've never worked in that sort of circle. I thought I wanted to get to jobs that were going to help my skill set and my speed. So I worked in a hotel for a little while after Spain, which was because I knew I was quite slow, and I knew that if I worked in a hotel, it was breakfast, lunch, dinner, the pace was going to get picked up, and I was under a lot more pressure. But actually, it was like a low position, so it was good to get my head down. But I'd done really well and progressed quite quick. Back in Spain, it was run by a couple from Solihull near Birmingham. So So I just moved straight into a beautiful location with all but Brummies, basically.
Oh wow!
And the little restaurant itself was like a really nice setting. So it's like in a lemon tree garden. So it's like half was inside, half was outside with the lemon tree. And it's pretty special.
Do you have any interesting short stories that you can share from that time?
A few of them are probably a bit X-rated from the after parties and stuff like that. But we used to cook for a lot of sort of well-known famous people there because they had holiday homes. So we had John Barnes, used to play for Liverpool and England. He came like every other night for like about two or three weeks.
Right.
We got to know him. And then we had Michael Palin, the explorer. He came and he was really nice. He came like every other night. That was a lot of fun. It was like cooking, and then we got to sit down with them afterwards and have a laugh and a joke and whatnot. And then one amazing story. There was a really wealthy customer, but we didn't know it at the time. He was chatting to us and he said, "Oh, you should come to my, I'm having a party on a boat. On Sunday and you're off, so you should come." So we're like, "Oh, that'd be good." So me and my pal, we're like 18, so we're dressed like 18-year-olds, and we head down to the port to this boat, and it's like a 10 million pound yacht.
Wow.
It's huge, right? And we got there, there's a butler and a doorman, and we're like, we thought it was just a little boat in our head, like a tiny little rowing boat. And we got there and he let us on. And these guys are really nice. So she's like, "Oh, come and have some drinks." And there was lobsters going around. And we were like, we literally didn't feel like we should have been on there. But he was such a nice customer. He just wanted to give us some back. Oh. And that was cool. And then that's when you kind of get the customer engagement. And you know that you know, if you're good to them, they're good to you. And
absolutely.
And that helps you, set you up when you're older for your restaurant or whatnot. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you opened up Carters of Moseley in 2010 and you received your first Michelin star in 2015. Is that something that you were aiming for, or was it completely unexpected?
No, for me, obviously I've never worked in one. So I've never worked for a chef who's sort of in that level or in a kitchen like that. It was weird. It was like, I thought it was a bit of a joke at first. I couldn't get my head around it. But obviously what I realise now is, because it was so focused what we were doing, like we opened the restaurants and me and Holly wanted a small place to refine what we did. So we'd done the pubs that were really good, like, you know, high value and really fresh food, like really, really good stuff. We'd done all of that and we felt like we needed something that pushed us a little bit more. So the idea of getting a small restaurant in recession was a crazy idea, really. But and we were quite young, but at the same time, we thought, this is our chance and we're going to do it. And we've always been workers. We work really well together. And then it's just really small scale at the time. It was like 3 or 4 of us. And we're just so focused. And the I always say, like, the longer you're in a place doing one thing over and over again, the better you're going to get at it. And it's kind of the way it's gone here. So, yeah, sort of like the thing that made us more nationally exposed was we won Good Food Guide Restaurant of the Year in 2013. And that's when people started to notice what we were doing. And it was all down to business. So we opened it, focused it to be a restaurant that we could live and work in, you know, and work for ourselves. And the restaurant, we worked out that if we took 45 to 50 pound a head per guest, we'd be okay. So we changed the menu to a set menu for that reason. And when we did that, immediately it was a lot more secure as a restaurant, and the people started to notice because it was a set menu. So then the guides were looking at it a little bit more, thinking, oh, it's got a bit of a style going on and whatnot, I think. And then obviously they started to come. And then obviously winning that was more national exposure, made us a lot busier. And then obviously 15 got a star for the Swanky Awards. So it was a phone call and in the kitchen kind of thing. But yeah, it's pretty surreal because obviously I've been in that circle. The first Michelin inspector I ever met in my own restaurant, he was the first one I ever met face to face. And yeah, it's quite weird. It's quite weird because a lot of my chef mates, they're so driven by that, and they work in these restaurants and that's all they want. They work, and they, you know, for me, it's kind of been like, oh, that's, it's like winning an Oscar, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I think the restaurant having it is the best thing ever, but yeah, it wasn't the reason I opened it. And that's cool because it's a nice thing to sort of, you know, add on to what we do, and we're all really proud of that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing that you've accomplished that on your own. You haven't had any experience with other Michelin star chefs. You've literally, that's just off your own back. So yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. Who are the chefs that inspire you, that you know, you draw inspiration from?
Actually, when I was younger, I used to love Gary Rhodes. And like when I was like growing up through there. So when I was in a small place that I run with Holly and where I first met her, I used to basically decide to put something on the menu and then learn how to cook it, basically, because I didn't know how to cook it. And he was like my main, because I was had this British thing running through me since day one. So I've always been Mr. British. I've always liked everything British. And it's like, over the years, I've just refined that to where we are now. But Gary Rhodes, for me, in his day, like in, you know, the early 2000s, he was a pioneer of that. And he's basically got a Michelin star cooking bread and butter pudding. Now, that's like an achievement itself. And he made it all very current again and exciting. And I just remember always going to that book and thinking that it was really, really exciting to read it and learn about the recipes. And I still cook the haddock rarebit now. I think that's like a genius invention. I wish I'd have thought of it. That's the dish I wish I'd have thought of.
do you serve it in your restaurant?
No. I wouldn't replicate anything in the restaurant. I think unless you know someone personally or you've worked for them, I think that's a nice thing to do. But for me, it's all got to be from
in there. Yeah, absolutely. And so where do you get the inspiration from to create your own dishes? Do you work from the way it looks? I mean, obviously it's seasonal, but is the way it looks important to you, or is it more about the taste?
Yeah, I think overall, like, it's flavour always, and then we work back from that. So we look at, because it's very specific what we're saying we do, we don't use many imported ingredients at all, just almost down to chocolate and coffee. Important. So whereas we'd normally just, you know, if you can want acidity, grab a lemon, then you add lemon and that's that, it's done and the sauce is finished. But with us, we don't use them, so we have to think a lot more. So it kind of pushed us into a corner and made it very very more challenging and a lot more difficult, but it's actually made us far more creative, because for that little bit of pain, thinking and getting it to the plate and getting it right is actually made us unique,
right?
And that's what I get off on that. It's like hard for me sometimes. You get writer's block and you're trying to think of something, but it's always about the taste. So like, we'll find something that we really like, and then we're like, right, this reminds me of this, okay, and then we start thinking about something like that's really classic, and then we're like, oh, we can use that and do it in our own style,
right.
And the presentation and everything is very minimalistic, so we like the product to shine. So then the look of it is always down to, like, we try and bring it from its natural habitat to the table. So there's a lot of thought that goes behind that part of it. And actually, a lot of the things that I think about the most are sort of the mouthfeel and the delivery. So if you take a duck, for instance, I always ask myself the things I like most about duck. So it's the fat, the flavour of the meat, the crispiness of the skin, all of these factors. So then I work my ass off trying to create the best skin, the best deep flavour. And then I highlight the things that I really like about eating them myself. And then I work really hard on the technique. So the technique is, and the supply is far more important than the plate, the look of it, and everything like that comes second.
Got it. And you've mentioned Holly quite a few times. So she works front of house and provides the dining experience while you create the magic in the kitchen. How is it for you in that, working in that husband and wife sort of dynamic?
Yeah, it's sometimes it's, you know, I'll have a little moan and she just ignore me. I think that's the way to work. So long.
But what happens when you strongly disagree on something? Who usually makes the argument?
So years ago, when we were younger, obviously we worked together for a while before we actually got together. So it was just natural. It just felt like I'd been working with her for a long time. So we really got the work thing. And then I'm only where I am because of the support she gives me to, you know, I'm crazy. I'll commit and I want to do a million things at once. And she's just like, yeah. And then, you know, I need that because I need someone to be able to just sweep up the army kind of thing and make everything work well. She's obviously got a natural ability with guests, so she's like, what she does with people is her thing, and people love coming in to see her. So like, a lot of guests love the food, but they actually prefer just to come and have a drink and meet her. That's one of the factors we have. But over the years, obviously, you get quite shady and, like, you know, there's a bit of tension, but we've learned how to deal with it, refine it, and we kind of keep it to, like, meetings. So we keep work and then try and separate. I think that's really important. I think you need to know what's work and what's not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that sort of dynamic works really well, because, I mean, no one's going to care about your business as much as you two, right? So,
yeah.
So, you know, working as a team it's so important, but, you know, and throwing it, that it
actually, dynamic. It actually goes further with us, because my right-hand man, Peter, is my sous chef. He's actually Holly's brother as well. But we employed him for his skills as a chef, but actually having that depth of family through the business, and then Alex is basically like adopted family now.
Oh, amazing.
Like a brother. So for us, it's solid, because the four of us and then the other people that work here bolt on. And actually, a lot of the staff come here, like, it's not about, we don't look at CVs. We you know, they're not the most important thing. We hire personalities and people who really want to work here and live this lifestyle, because the restaurant is so, we live the way we work. So like, you know, the customer, we only eat the food the customer would eat. There's no secrets, you know, everything we give to them is the way that we live at home. And like everyone who works here actually is the same, and they get that. And that's a big part of working here. Really. It's not all about just, oh, I want to go there to earn money and learn off this chef and then off I go.
It's all about passion.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so, wow, family affair. I think that's awesome. Is there, what's your worst kitchen disaster story? Have you got any encounters with your brother-in-law?
we had a couple of, we used to call them the rock and roll days when there's just the two of us in the kitchen. That were hard, you know, long. Actually, one of the hardest things here was the first Christmas, we didn't know the market, didn't know how busy we were going to be. And actually, we committed to open Christmas Day, which we do every year in the suburbs. And it's a really good day for us, for the customers, money-wise. But the first Christmas, we did a Christmas Eve and we were absolutely packed. I mean, we were flat out. We didn't stop and we didn't expect to be that busy. But we hadn't done any sort of prep for Christmas Day. And we committed to doing beef Wellingtons, like individual ones for every person that was coming in on Christmas Day. It's about 40 guests. And that's a lot of work. So we started them after service. So that's like 1 a.m. And I literally didn't sleep. Like, we're literally doing beef Wellingtons all through the night. By hand, individually, and took till about 6:37, and then I thought, I've got to get an hour's sleep. And I used to live upstairs, so I basically went up for an hour's sleep. And then one of my friends from school, he's still in touch with, he's a fireman, so he was coming home from work at 8, and he woke me up to say happy Christmas, but I literally had an hour's sleep.
Right. And,
that was the good old days when we were like, we didn't know what was going on. We were working, or sleeping in the kitchen. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Change a little bit now, though. Get a little few more hours sleep now.
Yeah, of course. Very important. It's a stressful environment in the kitchen. So, yeah, you got to have your sleep.
Actually, that's a big thing at ours. We try and keep it stress-free. We're very focused on service. It's all about customers. But there's no shouting, there's none of that. I haven't been taught that way. It's like, for me, shouting for me is negative. So at school, at home, all of that, I just turn off from it. It's not for me. And I think the people would do the same. Right. If I was doing it to them, they'd turn around. And there's none of that. And actually, we haven't got a wall in the kitchen. It's completely open. The dining room is the kitchen. So it's important that we just look like we're having a good time. You know, at the end of the day, it's a precious time for the guests to come here on their lunch or dinner off, and we want to welcome them and make them have the best time, like, because we're having a good time.
Yeah, of course. So just one last question for you. It's been amazing chatting with you. Just one last thing, which is, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
So a few people know it now, but when I was growing up as a chef, I used to work in the underground rave scene. So I used to do DJ and MC with my friends.
Oh, that's cool.
And I started to get really good at it, because it's something that I grew up with from the mid-90s when I was at school, and then I just carried it on. And I've tried to integrate it into my restaurant and whatnot at the moment. It's challenging because it's very different to nature.
Right.
I think my personality is definitely starting to shine through here now. And I think that's something that I really love. And I still like 160 beats per minute. And I still, every time I get a chance, I play.
Well, you never know. You could always record your own music and play it in the restaurant or.
That is the dream. That is the dream. I don't know whether every customer would like it, but that is the dream. Yeah.
It could be a little softer, more muted for the restaurant. And then, you know, in the kitchen, it could just be really wild to get you guys going.
That's it. Yeah, pre-service action, that is. Yeah, get them all pumped up before we start.
Absolutely. So it's been amazing chatting with you, Brad. Thank you so much for your time. Guys, if you want to follow Brad on Instagram, he's at Chef Brad Carter, and I'm at Posh Nosh Gal. Thank you so much, Brad. Take care.
Thanks.